Oh, well, then you don't know I'm Jan Nairn.
I know that.
So, yeah. And my excuse for doing this were two, that A, I'm not any kind of an expert, I'm not an English professor like some people in this room. I was once a humble high school English teacher long ago, but that was long ago. I am a pastor, so I think about things like this. But basically, I'm just a Tolkien nerd. So, but I have never been able to find people out there to engage in conversation about these books and this film the way I wanted to talk about them. So my ulterior motive was to get a group of people at my disposal to talk about this the way I want to talk about it. So you are here. And I did announce a overall title for this, which was I Hear a Call, which comes from one of the songs we're going to be looking at today, Scenes from the Faithful Life in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. And I am using the movie and the book, as I explained in the first session, as a parable. The reign of God will be like a hobbit who set out to destroy a ring of power, in which resided for various people, various evil, focus that evil in some way. And the first session was called Concerning Hobbits, in which we looked at the call and the promise of being the little ones, the hobbits being an example of being little ones, and the Saruman being an example of a corrupted person who had now done the reverse of what the little ones were about. And this morning in the Bible study, Terry referred to that Adam and Eve in the opening chapters of the Bible were put into the Garden of Eden to, the words I think in our translations now are to till and to keep. And he made the point that in actual fact it would be to serve. The word would really mean to serve. They were put there in the garden to serve the garden. And the type of lifestyle we saw with the hobbits in Hobbiton has a word that we often use for it, which we didn't even refer to in the discussion, but I'm sure you all know that word. You heard it last week. What is the word we describe, use to describe the type of life, the good life that God intends for us, and that we commit in the kingdom, in the church, to make present in the world? We promise it to each other every week. In our service, peace be with you, Irene, in Greek, in Hebrew, even more familiar word,
shalom.
And so that is the kind of life that God created humanity for and made the garden and put them to serve that garden. And so we saw that in the first one, the first episode, and that the hobbits, and this was my favorite line about them, they delighted in parties and in presents, which they gave away freely and eagerly accepted. In other words, that they received the good gifts freely and were glad to receive them and always had their hands open. And this morning, we had a bit of this, talking about those kids, and we've all experienced them, who go through life kind of with a sense of entitlement, and those who have a sense of gratitude. And so the hobbits, the little ones, live life with a sense of gratitude, conscious that everything they have received, which they gladly received as a gift, and therefore as eagerly giving it away. And that kind of characterizes this life lived in the reign of God, is a realm of God, is a life lived in grace, a life of graciously receiving and graciously giving. So anyway. And then yesterday's text topic was the call and promise of the journey, and we looked at this motif that is throughout the world. It's a universal motif of the journey and our call to be led out into some calling, some vocation that is out there and leading us on into a life of meaning and purpose. And of course, this is what is so lacking in the world today, is this sense of meaning and purpose in life. And you see so many sad people without that. So this calling to a life of meaning and purpose and finding that in the journey, which is in fact and very much and very literally in this story, a journey through death to life. And so that's what we talked about yesterday. We didn't quite finish. There were two further scenes that made the point that you can't go home again, in a sense, and we talked about that, the idea of a journey in which it's there and back again. You go there, you do that, and you come back, and it's life as usual. Well, our journey in faith is not to go back to life as usual. We're to go back to transformed, back to something new, back to a new way of being in the world, and that's what it means to go through death to life. We die to old ways of being, and we rise again each day, sometimes to new ways of being in the world. And we talked about that as being both exciting and scary. This little scene, which is somewhat misused by Peter Jackson, frankly, but in the book, this is the way it reads. He slightly misuses it in the movie. It's the scene talking about the tall tales and being involved, living in a tale. "I don't like anything here at all," said Frodo. This is as they're going into Mordor. "Step or stone, breath or bone, air, earth, air, water, all seem accursed, but so our path is laid." Sometimes our paths take us to places that we don't really want to be. Definitely out of our comfort zones. "Yes, that is so," said Sam. "And we shouldn't be here at all if we had known more about it before we started." I love a line in Luther's commentary on Jeremiah, commenting on Jeremiah's great lament against God for having lured him into something that he really didn't want to do. And he actually says he's been raped. He uses a very strong word, that he's been by God into this. And Luther, in commenting on that, says, "If I had known what was going to happen," when he nailed those 95 theses to that door, "wild horses couldn't have brought me to it," he says. And it often is that way, that in following that calling, we are led out of our comfort zones into places that we definitely would not have chosen. So Sam goes on, "We shouldn't be here at all if we had known more about it before we started. But I suppose it's often that way. The brave things in the old tales and songs, adventures as I used to call them, I used to think that they were things that wonderful folk of the stories went out and looked for, the great heroes, you know, because they wanted them, because they were exciting and life was a bit dull, a kind of a sport, as you might say. But that's not the way with the tales that really mattered, or the ones that stay in the mind. Folks seem to have just been landed in them. Usually, their paths were laid that way, as you put it. But I expect they had lots of chances like us of turning back, only they didn't. And if they had, we shouldn't know, because they would have been forgotten. We hear about those as just went on, not all to a good end, mind you, at least not to what folk inside the story, and not outside it would call a good end. You know, coming home and finding things all right, though not quite the same, like old Mr. Bilbo. Those aren't always the best tales to hear, though they may be the best tales to get landed in. I wonder what sort of a tale we've landed in." "I wonder," said Frodo, "but I don't know. And that's the way of the real tale. Take anyone that you're fond of. You may know or guess what kind of tale it is, happy ending or sad ending, but the people in it don't know, and you don't want them to know. And so the story that we get involved in is like the prayer, like the holy prayer. Paths as yet untrodden, perils unknown. Paths that we don't know, and yet we go out into them and often land in things that we don't quite want to." Now, there's a scene. Any comments or questions on that from the previous two sessions? We're going to go on today to this very idea of coming home. And so there's a scene here, though, with one other topic I want to bring up and allow people to think about.
It's such a weight to carry. Such a weight.
with that way. Great as we can.
There's no point carrying anything we're not sure to need.
Leave it all to follow. Okay, that makes two further points, of course, about the journey, leaving all to follow. They literally leave everything behind and become utterly vulnerable to whatever happens. And when we set out on this journey, we do make ourselves vulnerable. We don't know where it's going to go. We lay ourselves open and vulnerable to so much. But it also raises the issue that I left you with yesterday about the whole idea of evil in here. And Terry also said something this morning that was really, in the Bible study, really powerful about that whole idea of a word that got translated as punishment for sin. And he made the point that actually it's the same word, that the evil itself results in the evil, that it is not that some punishment is inflicted on Sodom and Gomorrah for their evil. It is the evil catches them up, and it is the evil that self is the punishment. Evil of it is its own reward, you might say, to reverse the thing. And that is so terribly, terribly important and vital in Tolkien, that though Tolkien is not a pacifist, though he greatly admires and is wrapped up in the heroic stories of the Anglo-Saxon tradition and the whole, you know, code of the knight and all of that, and he honors it greatly and is not a pacifist as such, he does firmly believe, and in the book, it is always ultimately evil that destroys evil. If evil gets destroyed, it is destroyed by evil. And that is why it is so important, and it's the one thing I would really, if I could meet Peter Jackson, I'd have him for. And that is that at the end, when they're teetering on the brink of the chasm, that when Gollum goes into the fire, it is because he is dancing in uncontrolled glee for having gotten the ring. And it is his own glee and celebration of having gotten that ring, having won, that results in his destruction, not in anything that Frodo did. And that's awfully vital for Tolkien. But all the way through, that is the point, that it is evil that ultimately destroys evil. But that little scene then, a picture where they're mired down as the people in the great stories. They're inside the story. You notice Frodo there can't see the hope and the light that Sam sees. And he's looking up into the sky and seeing the beauty of this star. And you see there the tower and this all-powerful eye of the tower searching about. It's just a little spotlight. Searching about, and that is the power they're all so afraid of that seems so overwhelming. And yet, beyond that little pinprick of light, beyond that is this light. The light shines in the darkness, and
the darkness shall not overcome it.
So that is ultimately what Tolkien wants to say about the forces of evil in the world that we are so overwhelmed by. And we give lip service to that, and we claim that that is what we believe. But how often do we act as if it is the evil that has the ultimate power? And let it have power over our lives. And we let it have that power. But this is not Tolkien's point, that he says that there is this good that is beyond that, that will ultimately be. Then the then we'll ultimately be what is in control. So any questions or comments on that aspect of it? Okay, well, the point we were getting at today is the title I gave it is There and Back Again, The Call and the Promise of Home. And we've also dealt with one aspect of that, that you may come home again, but you don't come home unscathed, unchanged. You come home in a new place. But we've got to ask the question about poor old Gollum. And I spend an awful lot of time thinking about Gollum and have tried to find some possibility of his redemption in the end. Okay, now. Oh, could you pause for just a moment? I forgot to set up the scene. Come on in. We're really just starting today's topic. You haven't missed anything. So, who here hasn't seen the movie? Yeah, okay. Or read the books, yeah. Okay, in this scene, this character who becomes Gollum, these are people very closely related to hobbits. They're the river people, they're called, and they're essentially hobbits, so sort of second cousins of hobbits. And we have two people here, Meagle and Smeagol, and they are best friends, and they're simple fisher folk, and they're best friends, and they're out fishing. And Meagle gets pulled out of the boat by a great fish, sound like, isn't it familiar? A great fish pulls him out of the boat, and Smeagol might easily feel that he's been drowned. He's disappeared onto the water and just vanished. And down there in the water, just before he comes up to breathe again, he finds a gold ring, this ring of power. That's what the whole story is about. And so we now see what happens. Gollum, Smeagol, is rushing up, overjoyed to find his friend is safe. And he's overjoyed to find his best friend that he is safe now and observe what happens. Okay, sorry. It all the way through to know how that scene is going to end. And but before we go on, what overtones of things in the Bible did you observe already in that scene, or overtones of the things we've been talking about the story?